Welcome to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast with founders Stan Campbell and Mike Darter. If you're forced to fight the battle for your life, CCW Safe will fight the battle for your future.
All right, welcome back to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast. I'm Mike Darter in Oklahoma City. Here with Stan Campbell.
I'm Stan Campbell. That's right, Stan Campbell in Las Vegas is where I am right now.
Man, we talked about the weather last time. Still cold here. What about you?
It's kind of mild. It's a little cloudy, but not bad.
Mild. Well, we got today, we have Steve Moses with us. And we had him on a podcast, maybe a month ago or so?
A little over a month ago.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about, we're going to start out today talking about the New Year's resolutions.
That's right.
Stan, you got anything before we get into this?
No, you know, when you think about it, and I enjoyed Steve's articles, you know, everyone always talks about resolutions and, you know, we call it that just because it's what you're supposed to, you know, it's a self-promise. And a lot of people, because what happens in the past is that you give up on these things. I love the way that he broke down this series, you know, talking about New Year's resolutions, you know, because, you know, the bottom line is a lot of these, the things that we promise ourselves, because a resolution is just simply a self-promise to make a change in the future and to continue that into the new year and beyond, you know, what we end up doing, you know, many times with people working out and different things like that, they'll get started for about a good 6 weeks and then it's gone.
Right.
So hopefully, you know, all you guys got a chance to read his articles. And if you're not, just go back and check them out. Hopefully, Michael will share them as well. But it's very important, you know, when it comes down to your defense, you know, taking care of your family, your gear, your training, all the other things associated with it, that you are real serious about it and take the time and the care to keep it going and make some changes in the new year.
Yeah, I'll put the links to all three articles in the show notes. And I liked it because it wasn't drastic, you know, stuff. It wasn't
Absolutely.
Big changes.
So. No. The small changes are probably, in my opinion, the best way to go. Just as long as you make a promise to yourself that I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do this for at least this certain length of time. And my experience has been that once you start doing something that ultimately has positive benefits, if you do it long enough, it becomes a habit, and it's something that you miss when you're not doing it.
Man, doesn't he have a
Absolutely.
Great voice?
He does.
He's got a voice like Don, man. He should have been on radio back in the day.
Yeah.
Hey, right quick, before we get into it, Steve, just because there might be some people who, new people who, they might have seen your articles, but they don't have a bio on you. Can you just give us a quick little bio, kind of like we did last
absolutely,
time?
Absolutely, Mike. I've been a defensive weapons and tactics trainer since 1994. I consider myself to essentially be a training junkie. I started training about 13 or 14 years after I had an incident where I encountered a burglar in my house at nighttime. The outcome turned out okay, but when it was complete, I was very much convinced that I'd made a number of tactical and strategic errors. I never wanted to find myself in a position where I was at a loss of things to do. As a result, I started training. I eventually became a firearms instructor at the Texas Pistol Academy. From there, I got involved in competitive shooting. I've been doing martial arts off and on ever since, golly, I was in college. That would have been in 1975. Currently study Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in Tyler, Texas. I teach at a Helston Gracie gym there. I'm also a reserve deputy constable. I've been one for about 17 years. I was on a multi-precinct tactical team, special response team for 11 years. I've probably taken over 100 weapons and tactics courses in the civilian sector and law enforcement only area. And, you know, basically, I'm a gun writer. I just have a lot of enthusiasm for all of this. This is something that's very important to me. I like giving back to the community, and it's just something that's you know, something that's just defined what I am. So that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, and one of the things that people might not know, I don't even think you know this, Dan. So one of the reasons I got in judo was because of Steve. You'd done judo for some time. I think you're a brown belt when I
that
got
was
in judo.
Taekwondo.
Oh, Taekwondo.
Taekwondo.
Okay, I thought you did judo. Did you not?
No, we came over there and did the Taekwondo.
That's right, at the church.
Demonstrations
okay,
at the church.
That's right. So after that, Kyle and I both
That's right.
We went through a church program he came and put on, and then after that I got into judo. So one of the reasons why I got into martial arts was because of an introduction by Steve. And you can tell by his training and his background, one of the things he said, you know, he found himself getting into a position where, you know, he thought he might have made some mistakes or something. And this is something that if you don't have any experience – this is really something you should listen and adhere to, because you don't want to get yourself into a position.
Absolutely.
To where, you know, and, you know, I think that's why these podcasts are good for our listeners, because they get to listen and to various people that we have on the shows, and they get to learn from it. So I think what you put together for the New Year's resolution is awesome. And I would like to see, you know, our members at least look at it. So
that's right.
Let's start with let me get this open for him here. Okay, so where do you want to start with this, Steve? Do you have any questions, Stan, to start off with?
Well, so Steve, actually, what made you choose this topic? I mean, I know.
Well, the upcoming New Year was a big part of it, and I thought, okay, what a good time to sit down and say, okay, I'm going to line out some things that I want to see done in the future. I assume that all of us, or at least I'm speaking of myself, we look back and we go, oh my gosh, I wish I had started something at that particular date. I did not. You know, you have some regrets over actions that you wish you'd taken. Well, there's no time like the present to go ahead and get into the game. And so I thought, okay, the timing on this is very good, because people, this is a time when people are considering making positive changes. My wife and I, we're members of a local gym in Tyler, Texas. We've worked out there. We've actually worked out together for probably 15 years. And we always notice right about the end of January, all of a sudden there's an influx of new members sporting, you know, brand new gear and brand new clothes. It's all very colorful. And that goes on for about 2 months, and then about 90% of them are gone. And so I'm like going, okay, this is a time of year where people say, hey, what can I do to improve myself? What can I do to make a better version of myself? And so I thought, this would be a great time to go ahead and put into paper some of the thoughts that I have put into place over the years, and that, at least for me, have generated some success. And when I say success, it's not always something just super tangible. Sometimes it's in terms of health benefits. Other times it's just in terms of, okay, I have this awareness. I have what I believe is a true confidence that I can manage the environment around me. I can manage myself. This is something that makes my family feel safe and secure. And just what a great gift that is to give to myself. And so to that end, I sat down. And I spent some time kicking out a four-page article that I thought, okay, I'm going to go ahead and set this out. For a lot of us, we kind of have these kind of vague feelings about, okay, how we think about something or how we feel about something that we never can quite articulate until someone else does it for us, and then we go, aha, that is exactly what I was thinking, and I was hoping this might be something that might be of benefit to our readers.
Nice.
Awesome. Thank you.
So what was the first, you had four parts.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. It was kind of a four-part series of what do I need to do or what should I do if I want to improve myself? And one of the very first things that I always recommend to people, whether they are, you know, self-defense oriented or whatever, is to do anything and everything they can within reason to improve their physical health.
Yeah.
And I think that is such a key element for all of the people that are, you know, liable to find themselves in an encounter where they need to have some sort of defensive skills in place. There's going to be 100 or more that are going to face some sort of a health issue at some point in their life. And one of the things that we see now is we see that people are living longer. By the same token, people are in some instances in worse health than ever. The longer you live, the more you have to do, in my opinion, in order to keep your mind and your body functioning. And just that ability to, you know, go. And in my particular instance, I believe that I need a certain amount of cardio, and I need to believe that I need to do something with weights or something that, you know, causes me to, you know, do something that will help me, at a minimum, not lose muscle mass. I'm not sure if this statistic is correct, but I've been told that after a certain point for adults, we lose a certain percentage mm-hmm. of our muscle mass every single year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's very important to do everything we can to, you know, minimize that. And one of the things that I have found, I'm really big into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I love it. There's a technical side of it. There's a tactical side of it. But one of the things that I've realized is that one of the things I can retain as I grow older is my strength. You know, I've lost some of my speed. I've lost probably, you know, some response time and everything. But I can retain my strength. I can retain my grip by working out. And so to that end, that's something that I've done, and I feel like I've benefited from that a great deal. And cardio is an important thing, too. Again, there's multiple reasons that, you know, it benefits us from a health perspective, but I can assure you that if you are in a position where you get into a tussle with someone, you're actually probably more likely to mm-hmm. get into a physical
right.
encounter with. I mean, most police officers can say, well, I haven't necessarily been in a shooting, but I've been in a bunch of,
yeah.
you know, physical encounters, is that mm-hmm. You need to have the cardio to go for at least, in my opinion, 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. That's a long time,
and that's a long, long, long time. And so just striving that, I think that brings us a lot of benefits. And there's just some other things that tend to happen. When we go ahead and we work out and we do all these things, we tend to be more healthy or health-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we tend to watch our diet, our sugar mm-hmm. intake. We sleep, you know, we try to get away from, you know, the carbohydrates, eat more proteins, green vegetables. And I can speak for myself. I'm now 65 years old. And there's not a lot of people that I see, you know, doing Brazilian
no.
jiu-jitsu. And although I can't roll as long as I would like to, you know, I'm still in a position where I get out there from time to time and I roll with the younger guys. And I'm like going, I know that part of this is just from the fact that I go out to the gymnasium and that I work out. And again, that is a function of discipline. I would urge anybody that's contemplating to, you know, to going this route to, you know, get a trainer for a short time, figure out what you need to do. Don't go to the gym and start just randomly lifting
right.
weights and trying to design your own weight program and everything. You need to go to an expert. You go to an expert for, you know, dental work. You go to an expert, you know, to do your taxes. Okay, you need to do that with a gym. I'm not saying that
yeah.
you need to go with a trainer and
yeah,
go with a trainer a long time.
Too.
If you want
yeah.
to get your maximum benefits, you would want to go with a trainer. But for I just want to improve myself where I'm in better health and I'm actually better prepared to defend myself, defend my family, defend my loved ones, discharge my duties,
mm-hmm.
you need to, you know, do what you can to, you know, keep your physical regimen up.
Well, there's one thing about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and it's very similar to judo as a ground portion, that I believe in. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, judo, wrestling, any real combat sport gets you out of the panic mode.
Yes.
And one of the great things about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is when you're underneath somebody for 3 minutes.
That's right.
You get out of that panic mode. And I saw it as a police officer. I saw it when I started a law enforcement judo team in Oklahoma City back before when I was still with Oklahoma City. And some of the new guys that would come out would get underneath somebody who knew what they were doing, and it would just be an absolute panic.
Yes.
And that I was told early on when I was training judo, I was trained by a former law enforcement guy, and he said, you know, you're going to notice foot pursuits and car pursuits, anything where you have a critical stress going on, you're going to be a lot more, you're going to be less panicked.
Yes.
Because of groundwork, NAWASA.
Yes.
And that's one thing I think that I think is very important as a role of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or wrestling or judo or any of the ground combat sports, is because it really attacks that. And like I said, 3 minutes on the ground, 30 seconds on the ground is a long time with somebody. If you got somebody who knows what they're doing,
absolutely,
so I would strongly agree with finding a program like that versus finding a gym. Second thing, and when you talk about improved physical condition in your article, you're talking about, you mentioned heart attack or stroke or other health issues.
Yes.
And we can all say this because we've been in law enforcement. You know, that's one of the biggest things with law enforcement that you see. You know, you get some of these guys who are older on the street, and they're doing, you know, foot pursuits. I mean, that's going to be a concern. I mean, you have to be able to not only survive the fight, but if you win, keep surviving. And you mm-hmm. can't win the fight and then, you know, drop dead to a heart attack because you're not prepared cardio-wise. So, and one of the things that I hear, I'm getting on a rant now. One of the things that I hear often is, well, I'm going to start that, but I got to get in shape first. And really, there is no, I don't think, especially when you're talking about judo, jiu-jitsu, wrestling type sport combat ground games, that is a totally different game. You can go out and run 10 miles a day and get on a mat, and it's a total different. It's an anaerobic versus aerobic. Yeah, it doesn't translate. So that's one thing. Boxing. I started boxing from judo. I had a judo school here in Oklahoma City for about 20 years. I actually closed it down when we started CCW Safe to devote more time to this, and I started boxing. And even transitioning from judo to boxing was a total different cardio. And so, you know, a lot of people who say, well, you know, I need to get in shape, I would say then get in shape by doing that. You know, if you are interested in, and I'll just say, if you're a concealed carrier, if you have taken the steps to get a permit and get a firearm, get training, you're probably the type of person who would really dig a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class or a judo class, something like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of my future topics for an article I'd like to do is going to be Kung Fu for the Concealed Carrier,
oh, yeah.
which is just, you know, kind of a tagline there. But one of the things I really want to stress is that for our listeners that are 50 years old, 60 years old, sedentary, overweight, underweight, there's still no time like the present mm-hmm. to go out and get into the system, because a good Brazilian jiu-jitsu school will accommodate students of every age, size, and condition. And the other thing that is so – we've gotten off on a tangent here. I'm kind of getting off in the weeds. I'll try not to stay too far. Is that with things like Brazilian jiu-jitsu, a big part of it is so mental, tactical. And by simply using things like leverage, remembering how to breathe, undermining or stopping anything that the attacker is trying to do to you right then, what that allows you to do is, if you are in a self-defense situation, you can learn the skills that will eventually allow you to get to a gun mm-hmm. or a knife, if that's what it's going to take to get that particular person off of you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something that's just really, you know, we see UFC and we see all these violent, you know, sports and everything. It's not like that. There's very much a sort of Zen, you know, kind of spiritual. I guess spiritual would be an appropriate word that applies to this.
Yeah.
So I really would encourage all of our listeners to at least, you know, check it out, go to a gymnasium and see if, you know, maybe that's worth giving it a try.
Yeah, and I know a lot of instructors. I mean, these, you know, you get an instructor who's a high-level instructor, they actually love that challenge to have somebody come in maybe a state where they're overweight or where they're out of shape. They like that challenge, and they want to accommodate that person. They want to see that person grow in that discipline and to get stronger and to get more healthy. So a lot of times I think people are intimidated to do that. But you have to remember, I mean, that's these people's livelihoods too. Right. And the more success they can have with people like that. So they're totally – I haven't been to many gyms at all that aren't. I have been to some that I probably wouldn't recommend to go to. But you do a little research.
You know, very sports.
Yeah, more sport. But you do a little research, and you know, I think that's a good point. And it's – like I said, it's never – there's never a better time than now.
Than the present.
And so I think that's probably enough on that. But also, you know, the thing that comes with that, you mentioned your mental acuity, concentration. You know, judo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu both are like chess. You're always setting up something ahead. You're always trying to get 2 to 3 moves ahead of that person. Mm-hmm. So beyond that, you're going to get, you know, your health habits are going to – your eating habits are going to get better. Sleep, which is probably one of the most – you know, overlooked aspects of training and rest, you're going to get more of that because you're going to be tired. So it's just good to, and I think it does. One of the things that I'll say about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and the sport, combat sports too, is it gets your ego in check.
Oh, yes, it does.
And it can get your ego in check fast. So, Stan, you got anything on that?
Yeah, just before you move forward, you know, I was listening to Steve, and I absolutely agree. You know, several of us on the police department trained under Rafael Lovato, who is also based in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and his son is an international player, and it was amazing. And also trains with the guys down there, OCPD, in the gym as well. And but I was thinking as I talk about, you know, training police officers, training people that are older, you know, I too used to run into a problem with, you know, the techniques and the different things that you train. You know, you have to have an instructor that absolutely knows that they're not just trying to train you to do what they can do, but they're also training for what you can do. And, you know, to keep you moving, you know, like some of the things you said, I'm a believer, just like Mike is, in mixing these things up. I used to love, you know, using, you know, studying Aikido.
Right.
And, you know, because you're using that person's aggression and their movements against them, which would actually be a great introduction as well, or something to mix in if you can find an instructor that teaches both. And also, as far as groundwork, if you can, you can find someone that specializes in, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu that also understands that you're protecting a firearm, you know, because there are techniques that should go along with also doing what you're doing so you don't expose your weapon. And knowing that, you know, as you move forward, just like Mike said, it is like playing chess. All martial arts is the same when it comes down to that, thinking forward and thinking about different moves and a move to an encounter, a counter and a counter to another move. You know, you always have to think ahead, and it does keep you calm. But at the same time, you have to now recognize that you have a gun on your hip. So not only are you protecting yourself, you're thinking about, you know, how much fight do you have in you. It's also protecting that weapon. So I would also suggest finding someone that, you know, teaches you how to deal with a gun retention standing, gun retention on the ground, and keeping somebody from disarming you. So that's all I wanted to add to that.
Yeah, and one other thing, joint mobility. I saw that listed in your article. I mean, that is
involuntary
huge.
Yoga.
Yeah, involuntary, yeah.
Yeah, just the joint flexion, being able to keep that mobility, because as life goes on, especially if you're probably like Mike and myself, and Stan, you may be in this boat too, where you've, you know, sustained some injuries to, you know, shoulders and backs and knees over time, is your body, as a response, will tend to contract the muscles. And so that ability to just continue that flexion and everything, not only does I think it will help, you know, in some instances, you know, heal some certain things just because you're getting more blood flow, but it will just make you to the point where you're not just all tight and actually you're just in less pain. You'll sleep better.
Yeah.
You'll sleep better.
I'm having that now with my shoulder. I went into the doctor last week, and I was hoping, you know, I was like, man, and I had a shoulder injury, and I was like, man, I think maybe it's just time to clean this out. And he was like, no, maybe it's just time to stretch and, you know, get that mobility going.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, did you have shoulder surgery not too long ago?
No, but I've got arthritis in my shoulder, but I've had two lumbar fusions.
Oh,
lower lumbar fusions. Okay, yeah. Matter of fact, to the point where I actually was so active, I broke the screws.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and had to have all of the hardware in the back taken out.
Wow. And if you see Steve, what are you, 6'4"?
Oh, no, 6'3"? Not 6'2".
You're saying you're my height?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you look taller than me. So 6'2"'s in great shape. Maybe we can get a full pic of you.
I'll try to spare you that. if I could come back around to something that Stan said, because I think the timing is real good.
Yeah.
In reference to protecting your gun and other sort of stuff, that is absolutely spot on. I'm not sure if I addressed it in this particular article or in another article, but there are some fantastic instructors. There's some here in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. There's some guys, I'm going to throw some names out, like Craig Douglas, Cecil Birch, Jerry Wetzel, Paul Sharp, Larry Linderman, Chris Fry, Cliff Byerly. These are all guys that teach these clinics on using immediate action, empty hand combatives to deal with lethal force situations, where these guys will actually teach you, and we do it too in Tyler, they'll actually teach you how to protect yourself and protect your gun so that you can prevent it from being disarmed or actually get it into play if you need to so that someone else is unable to get their hands on it and disarm it. So if you can go and get this information from some of these other parties, and there's some good videos and DVDs on these guys, then a lot of times, even if you don't have the ability to take a class from those guys, and I highly recommend these two-day clinics. You know, they do them all over the United States. If you have that knowledge, you can then take that knowledge to whatever school you attend and then work it into some of your techniques.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay, I learned this is what I need to do. This is how I need to protect it. And then you can use these techniques where you can say, for instance, you can block or control their arm that's closest to your firearm, how to create, you know, space, you know, how to get behind this other person. So you can actually learn this in one area and then go practice the more difficult part, which is going to be rolling, timing, leverage, you know, technique, setting up, you know, multiple techniques in a conventional Brazilian jiu-jitsu class or a judo class.
Yeah.
Even if you know, that particular instructor is not knowledgeable and able to teach that specific techniques.
Right. That's a great point. So improve physical conditioning, that's the first point. Let's go to the second one. And we're going to talk about, so just to give you, for listeners and for Steve, and we're going to do another podcast that's going to be more dealing with this, talking about gear. But the second thing you had was acquire a suitable handgun and important support gear and stick with it.
Yeah, and then forget about it. You know, guys, and I'm kind of this way, but I have a lot of friends that are way worse than me. We love guns. We love gear. We love accessories.
And trying new things.
Okay,
new
if I get this gun and I get this trigger and I get this sight, so it make me a better shooter. This gun is slightly more accurate. All this other stuff, and I think that's great. But I also believe that the reality of it is once you get a good proven handgun that, you know, basically fits your hand to the extent, you know, that's kind of overrated what fits your hands means.
Right, right.
But, you know, a gun that you can shoot well, that's got good sights, it's got a decent trigger, and you've proven it, it's durable, it's reliable, then go train with that particular pistol and don't go chasing the latest gun. Yeah. Unless that's just something you want to do as a hobby, like, okay, restoring old cars.
Collecting.
Or, you know, it's all the other stuff. Yeah. But I think, and I like guns, I'll be honest with you, I like guns too. But I think the more important thing is to find a setup that works for you, find support gear that works for you, confirm that it works for you, and then train with it. And I know you've done a bunch of force-on-force. I know Stan's done force-on-force. Mm-hmm. I've done force-on-force. And what I've noticed that during all of the force-on-force scenarios, the gun that was in my hand at the time was the least of my concerns.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't too concerned about the sights. I wasn't too concerned about the trigger. It was like, I got to deal with this problem. Okay.
Yeah.
So the thing is, get comfortable with your gear, find your gear, but don't spend a lot of time, you know, chasing that magic unicorn pistol or whatever. Now, having said that, gear is important, and you do need a good gun, and you do need a good holster, and you do need a good belt, and you do need a good magazine pouch or pouches. And so, you know, for me, I pretty much settled on the Glock 19 as my kind of go-to gun. I've used that for competition. I've used that when I do I'm actually, I don't think I've ever said this. I'm licensed to do executive protection in the state of Texas. I'm also a level 4 personal protection officer instructor, so I'm licensed to teach it. So I've done quite a bit of executive protection. As a matter of fact, I was on a I was the shift lead on a megachurch security detail for 7 years. As a matter of fact, we actually even teach a program on setting up security details for church security teams. I use that gun for that. I use this gun for concealed carry. I carry it on duty. Okay, so I've got a Glock 19. It seems to work real well. I recommend to people that, you know, get a gun like this, similar to this, maybe about the same size, but a gun that is, you can shoot it well, but it's still compact enough that you can conceal it and carry it, you know, most of the time. And then, I was, matter of fact, I was talking to Gary and Kyle about this. You know, we're talking about like the SIG 365 and all this stuff. You know, I also have a Glock 43 because there's going to be instances where I cannot, you know, comfortably carry and 19. Conceal a full-size gun. And so, okay, so I've got a subcompact gun. My particular gun is a Glock 43. I don't shoot it as well as my Glock 19, so I try to practice with it, you know, in order to make sure that I can at least be competent with it. But I still want to have a gun on my person. I want to have a gun on my person that I can control well. And then that's pretty much been it for me. I carry appendix to the extent that I can. I usually carry either a JM Kydex or a Keeper's Concealment holster. I find something like that allows me to carry my gun more easily given the type of clothes I mostly wear, which might be, you know, like a T-shirt or a shirt, you know, that's got a that's closed on front, shirt tail out and everything. With appendix carry, what I have found is that I can keep my hands into my center. I'm less likely to let my elbows flare out where somebody can disarm me or get their hands on me. And so that's something that I do. I think that that gear is important. I think, you know, having a good magazine pouch that allows you to easily access your magazine, store your magazine. One thing I would add about holsters is it's very important that we have holsters where the top will not collapse when the gun is withdrawn. Because what happens is that we need to have that ability to go ahead and reholster a gun safely, especially under stress, without having to, you know, try to work our pistol in it. I've actually seen leather holsters that when they partially collapse, when the person would go to shove the handgun in the holster, part of the holster would actually get caught up on the trigger. So that's a safety issue. So, again, without going way off in the weeds, that's a whole subject on its own on, you know, what's the best gear or what's good gear and everything. I think it's really important to find good gear, settle on it, and then say, okay, now I'm going to focus on my training.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we recommended kind of early on was to look at police departments in your jurisdiction. See what they carry,
right?
Because they've already been vetted. A lot of places carry Glock. My go-to is Glock 19. I do have a P365 that I really like. I've been carrying that more recently. But you know, police departments vet firearms and ammunition. So generally, you know, early on, especially, we would tell people look at what. Look at what has already been vetted around you, you know, what law enforcement are using in your jurisdiction, and that would give you a good idea maybe to start with. Something like that. And I like Glock. I mean, I've shot Glocks, you know, since day one on the police department, and so I'm very familiar with them. But the gear, you know, a lot of people don't, they may think about the holster, but not as much the belt.
Right, the belt's important.
Very important.
It's all important. It's all
so,
important.
So, Stan, you got anything you want to add on that, gear?
Just because you're doing a whole new podcast on gear, I'm not going to jump too deep into it, but I agree with everything you guys said on that.
Okay.
Your gun is a tool. Yep. At the end of the day, the gun is a tool, and it needs to be a good working tool. I don't care what profession you're in. You know, you need to have good tools, and gun is no more than that.
Agreed. Let's see. Sure. After that, you talked about shooting and then courses, programs.
Okay.
And stuff.
Okay.
So shooting sessions. And this is always something that I call always – I feel like I go to the range, I put up a – target and I shoot and with no good, you know, clarity on what I'm doing there other than just seeing if I could get holes where I want them to go.
Right.
Do you recommend drills? Or do you recommend
drills? Matter of fact, I also choose the drills that I'm going to shoot mm-hmm. before I go. I know what drills I'm going to shoot. I'm going to have the appropriate targets, and I'm going to have, you know, the correct amount of ammunition. And for me, I bring a shot timer, which the shot timer allows me to get a clear indication at what kind of time interval that I'm capable of shooting this drill.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, in a self-defense situation, this is a competitive event. It's actually going to take place. It's a timed event. Typically, the perpetrator is the one that initiates the time, often without warning.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't have a lot of time to respond if we're going to respond effectively. That's one of the reasons I think training is so absolutely critical is you need to have the skills in place and the plan in place before you have that encounter, so when the event takes place, you don't have to develop a plan and then enact your plan. So it's kind of like the whole, you know, OODA loop, which is, of course,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yep.
Observe, orient, decide, act, okay? Well, I want to be prepared so that I can go from observe to act just as quickly as possible. I want to have a very small reactionary lag there. From what I understand and my experience has been is that if you are attacked by someone, your best response is going to be to respond faster than they expect with more force than they anticipated. And so I need to have those skills available. And fortunately or unfortunately, the only way to do that is I have to go out and I have to do my dry fire practice, and then I have to go out to the range and confirm that my dry fire practice is correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so I typically will not shoot more than 100 rounds mm-hmm. at a session, and there's sometimes I'll drive 30 miles just to shoot 50 rounds.
Yeah,
but I know exactly what drills I'm going to work on, and typically I work on drills that I'm not very good at. Everybody likes to shoot drills that they're already good at, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, I'm like, you know, Davy Crockett here.
Yeah.
But, for instance, like a drill right now that is kind of my nemesis is Spencer Keepers introduced me to this drill. It's a 3x5 card, 7 yards, and my objective is to, from concealment, draw my handgun and shoot that card 3 times in 3 seconds or less.
Okay.
And to be able to do it on demand. And it's actually more difficult than it sounds because I tend to, like, oh, I took too much time, I went too fast, and so I'm just trying to do that over and over and over. And like, okay, once I kind of get that drill where I'm comfortable with that and I feel like, okay, I can do that on demand, I'll move on to another drill.
Mm-hmm.
And so it may be I'll spend some time typically on strong hand shooting. A lot of people don't spend enough time on strong hand shooting, but the reality of it is, again, you don't dictate
mm-hmm.
you know, where and when and how and why the fight took place.
Right.
And so you have to respond. And so we may very well, I mean, I have grandchildren. You know, I have my wife. I may have my hand on a car handle. I may all this other stuff. I need to have that ability to get that gun out with one hand and shoot it at close range and shoot it effectively. And I need to make my hits. And the reason I need to make my hits is because, one, if I fail to do that, I endanger the public. Mm-hmm. I think I may have spoken before that we found that if you shoot a 9mm handgun round at chest level, that bullet will travel about 100 yards before it hits the ground, and then it keeps going. And so we're accountable for every one of those rounds that goes downrange. And the second thing is, for my own benefit, I need to stop the threat.
Yeah.
And again, it's always not about, we don't say, oh, you need to kill that person, gun that person down, or anything. I mean, I try to avoid that kind of language. Is I need to stop the threat. The most effective way to stop that threat is to get a good hit on target, which, you know, God, hopefully I'm not going to get myself in trouble here, but from a psychological perspective, I don't want to kill that guy.
Right.
That's not my goal.
Right.
Matter of fact, the happiest thing would happen is A, that never takes place. Mm-hmm. B, if it gets close, I do something that causes the guy to, you know, disengage. I don't want that outcome. Mm-hmm. But if I have to do what I have to do, okay, I need to make those shots, and I need to make those shots count, okay? And so what is the most likely scenario that I'm going to do that? It's probably going to be close range, and it may be one-handed. And so those may be the drills I work on at that time.
And what was the distance on the drill, the 3x5 card?
7 yards.
7 yards, okay.
7 yards, which is a little bit longer than the distance of a car. And the reality of it is that if we're actually in a defensive scenario, it's probably going to happen at half that distance.
Yeah. And another thing, getting back to what we talked about at first, if it does get to that point, you're more likely to have a physical encounter first.
Absolutely.
So all the reason more to be sure that you are in good physical condition and you can mentally, you know, handle that panic.
Yeah, it's part of the big plan.
That's right.
It's part of the big plan. The other thing I do is I'll shoot my drill, and then I will carefully holster my handgun, and I will go up there, and I'll take my target. And then I'll go back, and I'm going to keep getting a continuous assessment of what my skills are versus, you know, just going to the range. I've seen this all the time where people shoot, you know, 100 holes into a target, and they have no idea where the last one went. And I'm like going, I'm sure the ammunition business, appreciates that and everything, but you would be so much better off, you know, going out there and practicing it with a specific thing in mind. And the other thing is, you know, biorhythms being what they are, some days I don't have a good day, and I don't, you know, I don't ace those drills, I don't shoot that well, but I tell you what I did do was I know I'm not a slacker. I know that I exerted some self-discipline, and I'm a big believer that self-discipline is just a huge part of this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it affects you in so many ways. It affects your job. It can affect your finances. It can, you know, your relationships. And so just that deal, okay, I'm going to make myself do this. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to get good gear. I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to practice, and I'm going to force myself to do this. And I go out to the range more often than not that motivated about going out there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's like working out. It's like working out. And when I go to the gym, Mike, I mean, God, I walk in there and I'm like going, oh, this is going to suck. And then I walk out and I'm like, oh, I'm glad I did
that. That's great. Yeah, you know,
Steve, can I add something?
Yes, sir, please.
On what you were just talking about?
Yes, sir.
And only because I'm not saying that you don't think of this, but you didn't talk about it. And when I talk to the audience and or actually to our members, and when I teach de-escalation, I also speak about, you know, adding certain things that is going to be that you can practice that's going to be real and a part of your shooting.
Yes,
and
sir.
That is because I know you said after you finish, you go up and you look at your target and you reassess. But prior to doing so, you know, after you holster, I think it's a good habit to get into to mouth or work through, of course, don't do it in front of a bunch of people, but either in your mind or just, you know, talk about, you know, or think about some of the things that you would say if you had to call 911 at that time after you holstered. If you're in an indoor range, of course, you can't move anywhere, but you can, while you're reloading, you know, practice that, you know, you know, your 911, I don't want to call it a speech or script, but yes. Just have an understanding just, that yeah. you need to tell them what's going on, that you're a victim, you know, get that information out about what you're wearing, and tell them that you've just placed your holster up and you're behind cover. If you're on an outdoor range, do it so that after you finish your course of fire, you move to a place of cover, go through that same thing prior to going up, you know, reload and then go back up to checking your target, so that, you know, the realism of what you're actually practicing for, which is the deadly force situation, you still practice for the follow through, which is your 911 call for assistance from police and medical. So I just want to throw that out there too.
That's great, excellent. Yeah. And one of the things I failed to mention, and I should mention, is that what I try to do, and you'll see me do this in matches, is that after I engage the target and I perceive the target as being down, I'll bring my gun in into a position. It's kind of a compressed, low-ready gun's more or less aimed at the ground, and I look behind me, mm-hmm. and then I come back up because gunfire tends to attract attention, mm-hmm. and it can attract attention from other bad guys. It can attract attention from good Samaritans, mm-hmm. and it can attract attention from the police. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I don't want to do is get shot yeah. by a well-intentioned good Samaritan or a police officer that feared for their life because of the way that I was, you know, he thought that I was a threat mm-hmm. at that particular time. And that is one of those things that you actually have to do in both dry fire mode and live fire mode. So that it becomes a conditioned response as opposed to, okay, well, I'll just arise to the occasion at the time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point.
Yeah, that's a good point, Stan.
Now, you good talked point. About dry fire. Do you recommend, like, the dry fire cards or
– I do not. No, I don't have a problem with it. Right. You know what? I shouldn't say. But I don't do it myself.
Right.
I've got my dry fire range out in my garage. My wife just looks at me like, what is wrong with you? And I go, I know there's stuff wrong with me. But I actually have stuff where I've got like a one-third sized cardboard IDPA target, mm-hmm. you know, stapled to the wall. I've got a 3x5 index card like I was talking about, stapled to the wall. I've got a little a 3-inch Black Bull. Mm-hmm. And so I go out into I live in the city. Most of the time I'm in the city. Mm-hmm. And so I go into the garage because I know that there is a brick wall yeah. backing up that sheetrock wall. I'd love to do this outside, but I always have this fear yeah. that if I get around mm-hmm. into that gun sometime, and I just assume that yeah. that gun can still always, you yeah. know, go yeah. off. I don't want to be responsible, even though I'd find a backstop having to, deal with the police.
Yeah.
And I practice in my garage. And I practice doing about 5 shots weak-handed. I do 5 strong-handed, drawing from the holster. And then I do 10 from the holster, where basically I want to clean up my draw. I want to get on target as quickly as possible. I want to pick up my sights on the way out to the target as soon as I can stabilize that gun, get my sight video, not a sight picture, but a sight video, because mm-hmm. your sights are going to be moving a little mm-hmm. bit, except that wobble. Press the trigger smoothly so the sights are not disturbed. Okay, relax my finger so as to simulate reset of the trigger. Come back down to that same position that I talked about, that kind of compressed low ready, but basically we call it position sill, position south. Mm-hmm. Your muzzle is actually pointed more at the ground than it is in front of you, so I'm not covering anything. And then I do a threat scan.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that, and all of that adds up to about 25 reps.
Yeah.
And so when I do that, I find myself, I can stay focused the whole time versus I'm going to go out there and do 100 reps, and then after a mm-hmm. while, you know, my enthusiasm and attention yeah. starts to wane, and then the quality of my work goes to pot.
Yeah.
But I think that's a big part, and I do that. Mike and Stan, I probably do that 4 to 5 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's actually, if anything, that is as important or more important than the live fire part.
Mm-hmm. And you brought up a good point with the brick wall. You know, it's like Larry had said, you know, that's why it's so important to adhere to the four rules of safety. And you know, if you're around guns a lot and long enough, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And you want to make sure that if it happens, that you are adhering to the rules to where nobody gets
absolutely
hurt.
Absolutely.
So the last thing we talk about was taking self-protection classes, clinics, or seminars twice a year.
Yes. Every single year I set myself up and I say, okay, what classes am I going to do this year? There's a really good trainer out of Austin, Texas named Carl Reen. Carl is a retired professor, grandmaster IPSC shooter. You know, I've known Carl forever, and he does a lot of very, very, very good schools. So this year it's just like, okay, I'm gonna take a Carl Reen class. And I usually take a Tom Givens class just because I've trained under Tom. Tom holds me to a high standard. He's very up to date on most of the training materials, so I like to go and, you know, just blatantly steal his material. I'll give him attribution, but I will steal it. I'll tell you in advance. If you tell me something good, I will pass it on to other people.
Oh, yeah.
But I try to say, okay, I'm going to do that at least two times a year. Dave Spalding class is on my radar, so I want to do Dave. And then I go to the tactical conference. And this year it's going to be it's going to be in New Orleans, and that is just it's already sold out. It sells out just very quickly. I think this is like my 16th year to go. I'm teaching a block there on martial arts for middle agers, and there's a bunch of training blocks that I will go and I will take and I will just learn as much as I can, and it's just it's inspiring to me.
Yeah.
It's inspiring to me. It keeps me motivated, and I always kind of look out for the benefit of, you know, my students. This is information I want to pass on to them. So I recommend to all of our listeners, take two classes a year.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have the funds or the means to travel, I bet you if you look around, there's somebody within 100 miles that teaches a good class, and there's a bunch of really good local instructors out there.
Yeah.
One of the things that I really urge students to do, especially if you're at the beginning of this, is make sure that the defensive shooting you get is very practical in nature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of the things I've done is I've taken a lot of training from law enforcement and ex-military. And those have been great classes, but by the same tokens, you know, the people weren't necessarily in tune with some of the same challenges and scenarios that the everyday civilian is. And, you know, being one of those guys that's really kind of, an everyday civilian first and a law enforcement second, you know, the interactions that you have from the perspective of a police officer with people is very different than the interactions you have with someone that does not have police powers.
Right.
And so it's just important to be able to kind of, you know, sift through, okay, what is really important to me? But like in Oklahoma City here, you know, you've got some, you've got multiple good trainers. And if you get out there, I mean, we'd be glad if somebody, you know, email us or let us know, say, hey, I'm in this area. Is there someone that you can recommend? The chances are that we can. But if you can travel, it's it's awesome. But there's a lot of good instructors out there. But, you know, don't get too fixated on anybody whose background is pure military or pure law enforcement. Not that there's not some good material there, but that's not the end-all, be-all. That's just kind of part of the whole picture. So that's my perspective on it is if you had the opportunity to go to something like, you know, TACCON or anything similar and then go take a couple of training classes a year, go out there, do your dry fire, go out and practice at least once a month. And if you can, go do an action pistol match.
Yeah.
Action pistol matches are absolutely one of the best training tools. IDPA, I like IDPA, IPSC, USPSA, steel shooting. You need to realize, though, that anything that they say, okay, the correct tactics to do for defensive purposes, you probably want to go the opposite way.
Yeah.
They're games. They're games.
Yeah.
For instance, in IDPA, it's not uncommon to have a scenario which has got 6 or 7 walls that you move from wall to wall using cover. Well, you guys that were on teams, you know, every time that I made an entry, I go, okay, I've got cover going into the house, and I've got cover going out of the house, and every other wall in here, people can shoot through. And so, you know, it's not all cover. The real world is not like that and everything.
Right.
But what that does is it puts you in a situation where you have to think about, okay, what is the stage design? Mm-hmm. How do I shoot this stage design? How do I shoot it quickly? And how do I shoot it so that I can be as accurate as possible? Well, what happens is after a while, you start getting better and better at just the shooting part where you can start focusing on solving the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the great thing about a self-defense scenario is being able to, my skills are in place. Now what I need to do is I need to see what's going on, I need to assess what's going on, and I need to respond to what's going on.
Right.
And after that, I need to do what's, okay, like I said, that's when the rest of the fight starts. That's when you've got to contact, you know, law enforcement, you maybe interact with them, you've got to contact CCW Safe. Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, you know, you've got some work to do. That's when you need to be able to work on that versus where's my gun? How do I get my gun out of my holster?
Right,
do I look
right
at my sights? Did I just crank that trigger?
Yeah.
So I'm a big advocate of doing that. And the other thing is if you're new to action pistol shooting is that you'll see these guys that are really good. They love new shooters.
Yeah.
They love new shooters. And old shooters like to give advice to new shooters. You know, sometimes it's like, okay, just, you know, shut up and leave me alone. But by the same token, you're welcome there. And I've been doing this for so long, is I've seen so many people come in that weren't very good at all that are now really, really good. And others that just said, okay, I'm going to go out here, I'm going to do this, I'm going to practice it, I just want to be competent.
Mm-hmm.
They're very capable of taking care of themselves.
Yeah. You know what I'd like to do is get a list from you of some of these instructors.
Absolutely.
List of links to where you can put in the show notes. We'll put one at TACCON and everything that we can put in.
Sure.
And then if anybody does have any questions, be sure to send them in. We'll get you an answer somewhere close to you. Like I said, I'm sure there's somewhere within 100 miles that you can go to.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'd like to end on one of the things, getting back again to you were talking earlier about not wanting to go in, and you're like, oh, I don't want to go in. You know, I did a seminar one time with Sala Hubero, and he was one of Lovato's coaches.
Okay.
He's
an
8-time world champion Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy, and awesome guy. And, you know, he was talking about how and I tell this to my girls, and it really applies to anything, basketball, you know, cycling, anything. The days you don't want to go in, those are the days that matter. You know, when you're on fire, like, man, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go train today. I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go play ball. I'm ready to play in this tournament. All those times are a collection of all those times where you didn't want to go in.
Exactly.
That's when you learn.
That's what made you.
That's what makes you that. So people, you know, keep that in mind if you're thinking, you know, well, yeah, this all sounds good, but I don't know if I can do that. And I don't know about getting involved in this or that. All it takes is that first step.
That's right.
And nobody wants to train all the time. Nobody wants to shoot all the time. Nobody wants to whatever sport they're in. Nobody really wants to do that. Maybe when you're 18 to 24, that happens, but you get to a point and you don't want to do it, but you force yourself to go in, and that's the time when you really train, you learn, and you basically prepare for that tournament. And if that tournament is a basketball tournament or somebody facing you down with a knife, you know, trying to carjack you or a firearm or something, you know, you have to be prepared for that. So I learned a lot from that talk he did. And he went on for a long time. But that was probably one of the most the talks that hit me the hardest during my training. It was after I'd trained for, you know, 15 years or
right.
so. But I pass that on to my kids. You know, you don't want to go. You don't want to go get on the gun and shoot baskets for an hour. But you know, you've got to get in there and do it. That's what's going to prepare you.
Well, and the other thing that is really cool about these resolutions, in my experience, is that if you say, I'm going to do this for 6 months, mm-hmm. I'm going to do this for a year, and then I'll reassess, is once you start reaping all of these positive benefits, then it becomes a habit, and you start associating the pleasures and the benefits, mm-hmm. you know, and endorphins or whatever it is that you get from this, to the point when like, oh, dadgummit, I can't go.
Yeah.
I can't go. I mean, I'm in Oklahoma City here for 3 days, so I'm not doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu, mm-hmm. I'm not working out, and I'm feeling really guilty about it. You know, it's like, oh, my gosh, I need to be doing that. I miss that.
Yeah.
I miss that.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's actually not nearly as much drudgery as it sounds. It's a gift in and of itself. And it's kind of like, you know, working for a living. You know, if you just worked when you wanted to work, you know, you wouldn't have a paycheck, you wouldn't have a car, you wouldn't have a house, you wouldn't have that gun.
Yeah. That's right.
And so it's like, okay, well, the same thing goes for all this other stuff.
Yeah.
You're working for that.
Yeah.
Okay? And good things are going to come from it.
Awesome. Well, Steve, it's great to have you on.
Thank
you, sir.
We're
going on over an hour. So, Stan, you got anything before we check out?
Yeah. Before we check out, I want you guys also to think back on the fact that, you know, no matter what we're talking about and all this preparation, you know, you also need to have your mindset in check and being prepared to save your own life and that of others. So make sure you always keep that in mind. I looked at this this video recently with an officer, a female officer who struggled with a murder suspect that actually pulled the trigger on her. And you know, she pleaded for her life, but then right at the window, she had the time to just reach her hands in there and grab the weapon and try to struggle with it. You know, or, you know, he would have been able to, you know, reacquire or work through the malfunction and shoot her before she pulled her firearm out or even get out the way. So you have to think about this, you know, when you are real close to someone and you may have to, you know, absolutely save your life with physical force. So just taking a look back, you know, just think about that and have the mindset to save your life. And that's all I have.
Good. Very good. Well, you guys be safe out there, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Mike.